Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Truist Foundation's Inspiring Conversations audio series. I'm Lynette Bell, president of the Truist Foundation. Our purpose at the foundation is to inspire and build better lives and communities. And we do this by partnering with nonprofit organizations that support this mission. During this audio series, I sit down with some of Truist Foundation's various grantee partners to talk about the amazing work they've done and to really help drive and make a difference in our communities. Today, I have the distinct pleasure of speaking with Gail McGovern. Gail is CEO of the American Red Cross. Our organizations have been partners for quite some time, but in 2023, Truist granted an additional $5 million to the Red Cross Community Adaptation Program. The program is empowering families after disasters by enhancing support in several target areas, areas that are high risk for extreme weather conditions and struggling with socioeconomic challenges. Good afternoon, Gail. Let me start by saying thank you for joining me today and welcome you to our Inspiring Conversation audio series. Before we dive into the conversation, could you, Gail, give a brief introduction of yourself? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Of course. And Lynette, I want to tell you that it's a real privilege to be able to do this. And Truist is a remarkable partner. So I actually got my very first job when I was 14 years old. And, you know, my parents instilled a work ethic, and I was a cashier. And honestly, I have never stopped working. I love to work. I love being with people that have big goals and problem solve their way through them. So that's a big part of me. And they also instilled a notion of volunteerism. And so I was everything from a Girl Scout leader to tutoring underprivileged kids. And that's always been an important part of my life too. And I guess one fun fact is I graduated Johns Hopkins University in the first cohort where they admitted women. There were 40 of us and there were 1,900 men. So that sort of taught me how to survive in an environment like that and gave me a good education. Then I graduated, got a bunch of corporate jobs. I was with AT&T for 23 years and Fidelity Investments for another 6 years. Wound up teaching marketing at Harvard University, the business school. And then I got the call to consider the Red Cross. And the minute I heard it, I thought, this is what I've been training for my whole life. And it's such a storied institution, and I wanted to be a part of it.
Well, Gail, I am so impressed that you took the time to join us today and so many nuggets here. I'm taking notes as you're talking about starting work at an early age of 14 and really having your parents kind of guide your pathway as they have responsibility for you, but also instilling in you the need to give back to your communities. And so that mission was placed into you at an early age and you were volunteering and helping those who needed that support. And then you graduated as a trailblazer, Gail, 40 women compared to 1,900 men. As the first cohort of students that are coming through that were women graduates, what an impressive measure. And I'm sure you learned a lot. But then as you started talking about your career and how you've navigated from AT&T to Fidelity and teaching at Harvard, you really have a 360 well-grounded an impressive pedigree of companies and also institutions that you've served. And so glad that you came to the Red Cross because realizing from an early age that mission was instilled into you, but then getting that learning along the way has been so critical. So as we think about the work and partnership between the Red Cross and Truist Foundation, what problems are we really tackling together to solve from your perspective?
Well, first of all, Truist has just been so generous with us. Over the years, you have donated more than $18 million to the American Red Cross. And I want to also highlight the fact that you've been a steady and loyal donor of blood. You've done so many blood drives for us, and every single one of those units is saving someone's life. So we just love the partnership that we have with you. You know, you have also signed up to be one of our annual disaster giving program members. And that is so important because you give us donations before disasters strike. And it lets us be in a state of preparedness, which is so important. You know, you can't just start figuring things out in the midst of a disaster. You've got to really be prepared. And of late, we got this beautiful grant from Truist, $5 million to help us with community adaptation. And what is that's all about is, you know, we are seeing the same communities getting clobbered over and over again with hurricanes and tornadoes and floods. And some of these communities are vulnerable communities that have socioeconomic challenges. And we are adapting our mission to be able to serve them in other ways than we have before. And we're forging partnerships so that we can deal with issues like housing, hunger, and health. And we're following these families. You know, I used to get this sinking feeling in my stomach when the last shelter would close because I'd think, where are they going to go? And now we're following them. In fact, this started during Hurricane Ian, where we wound up helping 900 families that we are sticking with for a year to make sure that they truly get back on their feet. And I'm just so glad that we've attempted this new initiative. It's working. And I am so grateful for Truist to be able to get us where we are right now.
Well, Gail, we are grateful for the partnership with you. And when we thought about who was the top leader in crisis management when it comes to preparedness and disaster, which are critical components of crisis management, American Red Cross was at the top of that list. And we're so proud to be a partner with you. And, you know, one of the things that we love about the Red Cross is that you're very agile in your model. And so we know there's so many different elements to providing disaster relief beyond just that immediate support. And you tackled and talked about a couple of them just now, but what does a real holistic approach to disaster relief look like since Red Cross is at the top of this point pyramid of crisis management, and how do you really embody that at Red Cross today?
I love the question. It's very thoughtful because most people just think of us as disaster response. And, you know, that's just part of what needs to be done. We have to be at the ready at all times. And so we have these national command centers whose full-time job is to be ready to respond to a disaster. We know one's going to happen, but we don't know where. So we literally have full-time people who are expert at this. And in between, they're training people, they're recruiting volunteers, and so forth. You know, the other thing is we need to be prepared. And that preparedness requires, you know, because there's so many disasters these days, it requires more fleet, more warehouses, more supplies, more trained people, more volunteers, more shelters. And so capacity planning is a big part of what we do as well. And we forge a lot of partnerships with other nonprofits. You know, we used to sort of work in silos. Now it's all hands on deck. And if you walk into a Red Cross shelter, for example, you will see people from Salvation Army, from the Mennonites, from the Latter-day Saints, you know, from Feeding America, from kitchens all across the country that can provide food. It's a big coordination effort where everybody helps, And it's kind of an amazing thing to see so many organizations want to solve these problems together. It makes us all much stronger.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It does make us strong. And in fact, that Red Cross has, again, got the agility to say we need to be a logistics manager and coordinate capacity planning. And oh, by the way, we need to create synergies with other nonprofits, because when you look at not only the holistic nature of the community, but the individuals in your shelters, you realize there's components that were absent that you now have brought in based on the crisis of preparedness that has to happen. So let's talk about the link between disaster scale and some of those socioeconomic challenges you talked about earlier. We know that when you experience a disaster, it's often a huge financial setback for families, some that are already, as you stated before, under-resourced or disadvantaged. How does the Red Cross really help to spur economic mobilities in communities? And I think I heard you say that we start tracking those families as well, Lynette, so that we ensure that they get back to some level of stability. Is there anything people need to know that is often left out from your story as it's told by some of your partners?
First of all, this leads us into a big topic, which is recovery. So we talked about preparedness, talked about response, but we are putting more attention against recovery because we're just seeing more and more disasters. And what we've done, it's actually a few things. First of all, we used to give financial assistance to families equally. So, you know, if it was a family of four with two kids, two adults, and another family of four with two kids, two adults, we would give them financial assistance that was equal. But in looking at those families, one family could have had decent income, they could have had home insurance, they could have gotten a FEMA check. Another family could not have insurance because they couldn't afford it, didn't qualify for a FEMA check, and was low income. And so we've looked at that, and the first thing that we've done is to go and figure out, using heat maps, where are there vulnerable communities that get hit with disasters? And now we are giving them a second round of financial assistance. We're still giving out one round equally, but now we're giving out a second round equitably. And that has made such a difference in people's lives. And we're also forging relationships with partnerships that can help with recovery, like the local health clinics, like the food banks, like people that are have expertise in housing. And we are keeping an eye on these folks to make sure they get back on their feet. And it makes all the difference in the world. And just having the data and the knowledge of knowing where these disasters will take place, because, for example, Terrebonne Parish in Louisiana is going to get hit. We just don't know when. And making sure that we know that community and we have partnerships on the ground. It really is making a big difference. And we're also recruiting volunteers and employees that reflect the diversity of the people that we're helping. And that has made a tremendous difference as well. You know, for example, we work with the NAACP to do damage assessment, which I think is great because it's getting more and more people that are diverse interested in our mission. And that is so important for our future.
Yeah, I think that, you know, what you just described, Gail, is the complexity of providing support, as you said, in not only the immediate urgent disaster, but what happens in that post-recovery. And the fact that the Red Cross has had that kind of predictive model that you're creating, saying, hey, we're going to assess these communities based on a heat map that are most vulnerable and figure out a way to get ahead of the storm a little bit so that we can be prepared and get that capacity planning for the crisis that we know is going to occur, because we're seeing more and more disasters, as you've stated. But I love the fact that when you talk about families and how you first started giving the first tranche of support, financial stability, you gave it same equitably across the board, but then you come back and look at families and say, there's a second round that happens based on their qualifications and other programs that exist from the federal government to state government that may or may not support them, but Red Cross is there to do that. So I just think the model is an exceptional one to begin with, and the forethought and foresight you have to think about predictability and logistics and capacity planning based on the needs of individuals. And finally, having representation of the diverse population in the communities that you serve is critically important from a volunteer standpoint. So really, applaud the work that you guys do. And I'm glad you told that part of the story that is often left out of the newsreel. So as we think about, Gail, this work and how complex it is and what you've done in your tenure here, What has been one of the most rewarding moments in your work thus far?
You know, it's funny because I sent an all-employee note that I was leaving, and I, in that note, I said that there are thousands of memories that I've collected over the 15 years. I mean, it's really hard to pick just one, but I will tell you the first time I really understood the Red Cross was just a couple of weeks after I was there, and I was dishing out chili on a feeding truck, and I did this for about 2 hours, and I pride myself in staying fit, but my biceps were shaking 2 hours, and I was in that truck with a man in his 70s, so, you know, I wasn't going to admit I couldn't do this any longer. So 2.5 hours later, I had to catch a flight back to D.C., and I didn't have time to stop at the hotel and clean myself up, and honestly, I didn't smell very good. I smelled like chili and onions and body odor, and my hair was so hot out, and the truck was hot. My hair was plastered down on my face, and my makeup was running. I was a mess, and as luck would have it, I was in the last row center seat on the airplane, and I'm thinking, I'm going to get thrown off this plane. I mean, I'm making the environment uncomfortable for all these passengers, and I'm walking down the aisle, and Lynette, people were touching my arm, saying, thank you. Thank you for everything you're doing to help us here in Texas. And I was losing it. I mean, I didn't really understand the impact of what we were doing. And they didn't know me at all. I just had a Red Cross t-shirt on. And I got to the back of the plane. The flight attendant said, you know, would you like a drink? I mean, I thought, this isn't about, you know, running an organization. It's about saving lives and helping people in their most vulnerable conditions. And, you know, it followed me all the way home. When I took a cab, the cab driver said, oh, thank you. I realized the beauty of the Red Cross. And I also understood the responsibility of running the Red Cross, and it was life-changing. It really was. And I can tell you more of those, but that was the first time I really deeply understood the difference that we can make in people's lives.
Gail, that's such a touching story and such a great visual. I could see you walking down the aisle and everybody reaching out to touch you in your red t-shirt going, thank you for being there. Because guess what we do? We assume when disaster happens, I'm always looking for American Red Cross, and I'm probably not alone. So the fact that you smelled of chili, nobody noticed that. They were just grateful for the work that you do. And talking about building brand equity, I mean, your organization, you don't get to touch and see everybody, but they got to touch you that day to say thank you for what you've done when disaster happened. Yeah. So I'm going to add to and say thank you again. And so, Gail, in your role as a leader, and, you know, I get to lead our Truist Foundation, but one of the things that is always a question that gets asked of me and would love to get your perspective on this as well, what are some of the most valuable lessons you've learned in your role, and what support have you leaned on personally as you led this really big organization?
So this is another great question, Lynette. So when I was in corporate America, I feel like I was a good leader. You know, I was kind. I would take a lot of input. I would, you know, listen to every single person's opinion. But then you get to a point where you say, okay, I've heard all your opinions. This is what we're going to do. We're going to take that hill. And I come to the Red Cross, and it's, you know, 300,000 volunteers. And it was in deep financial straits when I showed up. And, you know, I came up with a strategy that would close some of the financial gap that we needed to close. And I went out and, you know, did some listening tours to, you know, just make sure that I was doing the right thing. And I would say, okay, I've heard your input. And so now we're going to take that hill. And, you know, volunteers, they look at me and go, no, And I was like, what? And they go, no. And I think, okay, that's new. I can't give them a salary cut. You know, it's, and it really dawned on me at that moment that leading through the power of your ideas is more important than leading through the influence of your office. And I came to respect our volunteers, to trust our volunteers. It really changed the way that I led. And the other thing that I learned along the way is that great leaders need to not only lead with their head, but also lead with their heart. And, you know, I got a degree in theoretical mathematics. So, you know, I really use that left side of my brain. And when I started speaking to groups of people and telling them how important our mission is and leading from the heart, it really fundamentally changed not only the way I lead, but just who I am as a person. It's okay to motivate people through the lens of a mission. It doesn't have to be through the lens of financial results. And that, I think, is something I wish I knew when I was in corporate America. I mean, yeah, everyone wants to be part of a higher purpose. And, you know, the Red Cross has a higher purpose. But, you know, even when I was at AT&T, we were connecting people to the people that they love and the information that they need. And, you know, I should have, you know, spoke more about that. It wasn't the fashion of the day, and people might have thought I was odd, but everyone shows up to work because they want to be part of a higher purpose. And tapping into that is so powerful. And it'll make you feel better about yourself, too.
Gail, so many great nuggets. Thank you for that. I wrote down the ones that have resonated with me, which is leading through the power of ideas, not your office of influence, is really critical. And tapping into that higher calling and power to drive for those results, really critical. And I just love what you provided as an executive at the Red Cross. And you're right, you guys have a higher mission and you've been leading with that. But personally for you, lead with your head, lead with your heart and your head. Also, another crystallized nugget I think that leaders need to take on as they do some of this very critical work. Well, at Truist Foundation, you got an opportunity, Gail, to meet with our CEO, Bill Rogers. Was really excited to have that opportunity. We, and he believes that we should continue to grow and evolve our partnership with Red Cross. And as you think about this, can you talk a little bit about the importance of partnership with the Red Cross work and the impact of having that strong partnership as part of your overall engine of work?
Well, Truist is one of our most dedicated donors. And having had the privilege of meeting Bill, there's a spirit of community that runs through the organization. And I guess the easiest way to describe it is to say Truist gets us. You know, you understand the power of what we can do. You also understand where we have vulnerabilities, and you are there to help us patch them through some donations that really are allowing us to adapt and strengthen our mission. It's special. And, you know, with my visit there, everyone I met there is special. Everyone there feels like they have a higher purpose. And it was just an unbelievable visit. Everyone is kind, they have big hearts, and they don't waste money, and they keep us on our toes. Our best donors are the ones that want to know where are our dollars going? How are you stretching those dollars? You know, and those are the donors that we love working with. You know, it's one thing to cut a check. It's a different thing to say, where is it needed most? How can we help? Where do we apply our resources? You understand us. And, you know, that is that's a dream for a nonprofit. When you have donors that keep you on your toes, that want stewardship reports, that want to understand how you are helping people, it makes us better. And it's something I am really proud of and grateful for, the way the Truist Foundation has treated us.
Gail, thank you for that. And this is going to be the final question, but it's a good one. I just got the announcement yesterday that after 15 years with as CEO of the American Red Cross, that you will be retiring next year. As you think about your tenure, what are some of the proudest moments that you're leaving behind? And a second part of the question is that based on the legacy you're leaving behind, what do you want people to really value most about your contribution to the American Red Cross?
You know, I've really been thinking about this a lot, you know, ever since I knew that it was time for me to hand the baton to Cliff Holtz, who is extraordinary. And, you know, I think it would be hard for me not to pass the baton if it wasn't somebody who is so capable and ready to do this. But when I think back on my interview when I was being interviewed for the Red Cross, and I had done my due diligence, you know, and did a lot of research before I got in front of the search committee of the board. And they asked me what were the strengths and weaknesses. And I said, well, I think there's six things that you need to focus on. And I rattled them off. You know, you've got financial problems. We were under a consent decree for our blood business. The brand was getting kind of old and creaky. We weren't on social media. You know, our fundraising wasn't as sharp as it is now. And, you know, we had a lot of IT work to do. And the last thing was we needed to be better at teamwork. People were in little islands and they weren't helping each other out. They were really focused on their own, you know, roles and responsibilities. And so I said that to the board and they said to me, well, do you have any experience in your, you know, your work life that, that you've ever done any of these things? And so I was really honest. I said, look, I've done every one of these things, but I have never tried to do them all at once. And they kind of blinked and I said, but you know, I'm willing to try. And so I was looking back at those, we call them the six strategic initiatives, and we made progress on each one. And I am very, very proud of that. But the one I'm the most proud of, and I don't even think people externally understand this, is the teamwork. We've created a culture at the Red Cross where people love working with each other. They have each other's backs and they think differently. I mean, if you look at our senior deck, there's a lot of diversity in the classic sense, but there's also a lot of diversity of thought. Meaning, you know, I have a pessimist that always is worried about the future. I have an optimist that always thinks everything's going to be great. I have a de facto chief strategy officer who happens to be our former CFO. Just amazing people that all come at problems in different ways. And when we're trying to solve something, I can throw it in the middle of our conference room and say, okay, here's a big hairy problem. What are we going to do to fix it? And the debate and the ideas that flow and the arguing and they attack ideas, but they never attack each other. They have each other's backs. And it's rare for them to bring anything to me where they agree to disagree. And just being part of that team is glorious. Now that's inside baseball, of course, but it is the thing I'm most proud of. I sit back in our meetings and this flows all the way down the organization. And I watch people in action and I think, you know, my own senior team, I mean, I'm fairly bright. I think I'm probably in the bottom quartile of brains on my senior team. And it is so great to watch it unfold. And I think that's what I'm most proud of because it didn't exist before I came. And now it's so strong that it's a bond that I think will never be broken. It's what I'm most proud of. I mean, the other things are really important for our survival. Don't get me wrong. We had to tackle each of those. But when you have a group of people that are smart, that are independent thinkers, that are comfortable voicing their opinions, That's how all the rest of the stuff gets fixed.
Gail, it sounds like you created a culture of not only engagement, but connectivity with the team. And so human beings drive strategy every day, but culture is so critical, that open dialogue and attacking problems in a way that is non-threatening to the organization and each other is what you created. And I heard your 6 points of strategy that you tackled right away when you got in, but I think you hit it on the head that when you get the team excited and engaged to actually do the hard work for people they may or may not ever touch and see face to face, but know that you're hitting that higher concept and idea and higher mission, I think that's what you created. And so congratulations to you for doing that for 15 years at the American Red Cross.
Well, thank you, Lynette, for asking the question. It made me very thoughtful. And I'm just so grateful that you have me on this podcast. You're just an amazing partner to us, and I truly cannot thank you enough.
So thank you once again for joining me today, Gail. At Truist, our team continues to be excited about our long-term partnership and about supporting the work of the American Red Cross and what you're doing to help those in need.